Tired of being confused, frustrated, and even driven to distraction by today's financial markets? It's time to start thinking like a winning hedge fund manager. Your first step to this mindset is to spend the next hour with the mad hedge fund trader, John Thomas, a 40-year industry veteran and founder of the hedge fund industry. This is Hedge Fund Radio, and now your host, John Thomas.
Hello, investors in Houston, Shanghai, Tokyo, Australia, all the ships at sea, and today, New York City. This is John Thomas, the Mad Hedge Fund Trader on Hedge Fund Radio. I'm the publisher of the Diary of the Mad Hedge Fund Trader, and I'm here to show you how to invest like the traders who always come up with winners. I've been in this game for 40 years now, and I'm happy to pass my tricks of the trade on to you on Hedge Fund Radio. To see the charts and research that back up my show today, please go to my website at www.madhedgefundtrader.com. Today, our guest on Hedge Fund Radio is Anthony Scaramucci, the founder and co-managing partner of Skybridge Capital, a leading hedge fund of funds. After getting a law degree from Harvard, Anthony started his investment career at Goldman Sachs in 1989, where he spent 7 years in the private wealth management department. He went on to start his own money management firm, which he sold to Neuberger Berman in 2001. When Lehman Brothers bought Neuberger in 2003, he spent a short stint there as managing director of its investment management division. Anthony is the author of 2 books, The Little Book of Hedge Funds, What You Need to Know About Hedge Funds But the Managers Won't Tell You, and Goodbye Gordon Gekko, How to Find Your Fortune Without Losing Your Soul. To learn more about Skybridge, please go on to their website at www.skybridgecapital.com. So, Anthony, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me on the show. It's a pleasure.
So what do you think of the stock market up here today? I see the Dow at 15,255 and the S&P 500 at 1646.
Well, you know, listen, I mean, it's a Fed-induced bull market, John. So the real issue here is, will the economy catch up to what the Fed is doing as it relates to the reflation due to their monetary policy? And so, you know, I'm concerned longer term because we're only growing at about 2% in the country. We've had very little wage growth. And if you look at the U6 unemployment number, which would factor in people that have looked for work longer than a year, a lot of the part-time employees, et cetera, that's up at about 13.9%. And so that has me very worried about the fundamentals. But I don't think you can fight this tape. I think stocks are going to do very well as long as Ben Bernanke and his team is pressing the levers on monetary policy the way they're pressing them right now.
Well, let me ask you the hardest question I'll ask all morning. A new customer arrived in the door this morning. He's got a ton of cash. What do you do with it?
Well, you have to remember, we're a fund of funds. So what we typically do is we take people's money and we allocate it out to different managers. In our fund right now, we have about 28 managers. Most of that stuff is in what I call non-correlated risk to the market. So it doesn't really matter where interest rates go, and it doesn't really matter where the market goes. We should be able to generate through some of these cash flow generative strategies a decent rate of return for people. And a decent rate would be defined by a high single digit, low double-digit return in an interest rate environment like this. So if you gave me your money, it would end up in about 28 different funds. It would have very low exposure to the equity markets, but it would have more fixed income, distressed debt exposure, mortgage-backed security exposure. There would be some event-driven things on the equity side. So for your listeners, what that basically means is that if there's merger or arbitraging activity related to mergers where we can buy the acquisition target and get short the acquirer and lock in that spread, that's known as event-driven arbitrage, we would do things like that. So, you know, I'm really on the alternative side, focusing on trying to get people a return away from the stock market. But if you're asking me a specific stock market question, based on my 25 years of experience on Wall Street, I do believe that the market is going to continue its rally through the end of the year as long as the Fed stays where it is. And they sort of singled that yesterday. Chairman Bernanke's remarks were, I thought, consistent with what he said before. And so I do think that the market still has some room to run here.
Yeah, I'm afraid I agree with you. I think, you know, we're up for maybe a 5, 10% correction at the most this summer, and then we close out at new highs. You know, although you're not making specific stock and bond investments yourself, you are doing so indirectly with your manager selection.
Yeah.
So, you know, what would be your bias among specific sub-managers right now?
Well, okay, so I would gear your listeners more towards the large cap U.S. multinationals, you know, stocks like Pfizer, Walmart, blue chip names like a Johnson & Johnson. These are the sorts of names, Kimberly-Clark. These are the sorts of names that will do well in this environment. They're increasing their dividends, increasing earnings, still trading at reasonably priced multiples relative to where interest rates are. And so, for me, that's sort of where I would gear people if they're interested in equities. But I would also say that because we have reasonably low volatility right now, that gives me a little bit of a pause for concern because you're bringing up a correction. And it would not surprise me at all that there were some exogenous factors that hit the market, a news cycle that's negative in Syria, a news cycle negative in Iran, as an example. This could, you know, impact the market near term because we've had such a quick run-up. So, I'm cautiously optimistic for the end of the year, but I do tell people that you have to have a diversified portfolio. Some stocks, some bonds, some alternatives like SkyBridge. I deal with a lot of people. I deal with some wealthy people. My two words piece of advice to people that have money: stay wealthy.
Yeah, good advice.
And the way to do that is through diversification and not betting the ranch on any one specific thing or getting overly aggressive on stuff.
What would you do with Apple here? Are you an Apple lover or a hater?
Well, I think the stock is very cheap, but I think that they have a major innovation headwind. One of my colleagues in the hedge fund industry, Dave Kepper, has sold his shares. There's other guys that are value-oriented buyers that have got long shares. If you're a patient holder of Apple, I think you'll do well. But I do think that they have a headwind in front of them right now as it relates to their innovation curve, where they were peaking 2, 3, 4 years ago, prior to Steve Jobs' death, in terms of the new stuff that was coming out and the excitement around the story. I think they've got to go back to the well. This is one of the most difficult things about technology companies. If you and I were talking 15, 16 years ago, we'd be talking about AOL, we'd be talking about how they were going to be the main engine of growth for all things related to
And Yahoo.
And Yahoo. So, yeah, exactly. So, and those things are, well, Yahoo's still with us, but AOL has become more of a dinosaur. Not saying that, they haven't restructured or done better recently. But my point being is that very rough in technology, the product cycle turns, the innovation curves. And so unless Apple can, restart itself on the innovation side, I think there'll be a headwind on that stock in the near term.
Yeah, but still you got people like Leon Cooperman buying it on those dips below 400, and he certainly knows which end of the stock to hold up.
Well, he's my old boss. I love him dearly. I am one of his investors. I think the world of him. And he's a classic value manager, and so he's obviously taking a long-term view of Apple, and I think his view would be over a 12 to 36-month period of time. I'm more saying over the next 3 to 6 months, I think it's going to be rough sledding for them. But over 12 to 36 months, I think that's a stock that represents a lot of value, and I think people will do well if they're patient.
Now, you take in money from high-net-worth individuals, don't you? What's the minimum investment someone can make, and what are the fees you charge on that?
Well, our minimum investment is $50,000, and the person has to be accredited. They basically You'll have to be somebody that has at least $200,000 in income or a net worth north of $1 million. And it's a $50,000 minimum. We have a 90-day lockup on our product, and so people can get out with 65 days notice. We're charging 150 basis points for our advisory work, but we are getting discounted fees from the hedge funds that we allocate to because we're going into them in bulk, you know, and so we get it. We last year we returned about 77 basis points, or you know, 0.75% back to our investors from the cost savings that we're able to get from them. So I think our product is attractively priced. Our net results last year were very good. I don't know if I'll have to talk about them on the radio because people would say that's advertising, but I think you pointed people to our website. You can go to skybridgecapital.com and get more information about it. You know, we've won the HFM award for best performing hedge fund north, fund of funds north of $1 billion the last 3 years in a row. And so we do have a very strong discipline and a great research team at Skybridge that I'm personally very proud of.
Well, let me put it this way. If your results weren't any good, we wouldn't be talking.
Well, I have no doubt.
I try to make money for my clients just as you do.
No, of course. And what we both know is that we're only as good as our last trade, so in our business. So we're very good, you know, vigilant, diligent people. You know, we don't live on past performance. We're working very hard right now to generate return for clients.
I got to tell you, that conference you had in Las Vegas a couple of weeks ago was an absolute blast. What a blowout!
Oh well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you being there. I mean, we try to put an eclectic agenda together for people so that people can walk out of the experience learning something, as well as meeting some fun and interesting people, and hopefully. You know, the main goal is to help each other's businesses, you know.
Well, it certainly was eclectic, but I got to tell you, if you put Barney Frank and Karl Rove on the stage together again, you may have to call in for extra security.
Well, yeah, no, I'll tell you, they're very spirited and very passionate about their beliefs, and I think that's one of the hallmarks of the SOLF conference is that we try to get I tell people that I'm running an ideological conference, but it's a nonpartisan one in the sense that I want to bring both sides into the debate and give the people that attend our conferences the opportunity to hear, you know, I think some of the smartest people in our country debate issues. You know, I was with the dean of the Harvard Law School yesterday, Dean Minow, Martha Minow. We were talking about, one of the central ideas behind the educational format at Harvard Law School, and you know, I was there with President Obama when he was there. We have different political views, but I think we do think about these things similarly, is that you've got to take diverging ideas, diverging concepts, political ideas, investment ideas. The smartest among us can try to hold two of them simultaneously in our minds and try to reconcile and parse through what the best aspects are of each idea. And I think if we do that as a nation, we're going to get out of our problems a lot more quickly than if we act like the old Dr. Seuss children's characters, the North going and the South going sacks, where we're just sitting there beating upon each other and not moving anywhere. So those types of debates are designed at SOLF to at least try to advance the ball a little bit, but you can see they were clearly slugging it out with each other in a spirited way.
You went to school with President Obama, didn't you? What was he like as a person?
Well, listen, I have a personal regard for the president. I think he's a great family man. He's got a beautiful family, and he's an American. He's an American patriot. He certainly loves his country, despite all of those conspiracy theorists and all that nonsense. He was at Harvard Law School. He graded on the Harvard Law Review, so he's one of the smartest guys in his class. We just differ ideologically, directionally, in terms of where the country should be going and what role government should have in people's lives. So, you know, it's not a personal debate. I stand, as I said to the president, I stand in loyal opposition to many of his ideas. But he is our president, so I respect him. And, there was with another Harvard Law School alum that was running against, and that was Governor Romney, and I was on his team last time, and, you know, we're good sports, and so I wish the president well. One thing I will say to all of my Republican friends out there, we want the president to do well because it's better for the country. So.
Well, and he does well. We do well.
Exactly.
Now, you have another conference coming up in Singapore, don't you?
I do. We're doing our we do these events twice a year. One in Las Vegas, which I'm so happy that you had the opportunity to attend, and give you an open invite to our Singapore conference as well. We're doing that one on the 24th of September to the 27th. It's at the Marina Bay Sands Hotel, and we've got the central banker, retired central banker Claude Trichet, coming, as well as former Secretary of Treasury Timothy Geithner. They will both be in attendance at our event. And then we're filling in the agenda right now. There'll be some representation from some of the Asian hedge funds, some of the Asian plutocrats. We're also talking to many government officials across Asia, both Northern and Southeast Asia, to bring some interesting people to the debate. Last year, we had Vice President Gore in Singapore with Prime Minister Tony Blair, and we hosted over 1,200 people. John, I thought it was a great event for people, very similar to what you experienced in Las Vegas, although it had more, obviously, an Asian flair to it than a North American one.
Now, let's move on to some other asset classes. I take it in your bond allocations, you're moving away from plain vanilla 30-year treasury bonds and more towards the high-yield area like master limited partnerships and REITs.
Well, you know, I'll be more specific than that. You know, the answer is yes, we have little to no exposure to what I would call the U.S. treasury market, you know, as you're defining it. We're not in the master limited partnership or REIT area, but where we have big exposure is in the credit-sensitive mortgage-backed security space. And also what we call the prepayment-sensitive mortgage-backed security space. And so what's basically happened is that we are going through a housing recovery right now, but still many homes are either below the value of where they were before the crisis or they're at the value. They haven't certainly increased in value. And so the result of which is a lot of people that have not yet been able to refinance their homes. So these sort of prepayment-sensitive mortgages, which typically would, their bond prices would be reduced as people prepay their mortgages and refinance, these things have actually yielded very high coupons to the investors. And so this has been an unusual situation for the American economy because, and I spoke to Alan Greenspan, still trying to reconcile how this happened, and many people are, but it is what it is. We went through a crisis where our homes lost value. It's really the first time in the post-World War II history of the U.S. where we had that sort of housing shock, if you will. And so these prepayment-sensitive mortgages that we are investors in are yielding very high rates of return. The risk there is that people will eventually refinance, but we don't see that right now because home prices are going up, but they're not going up dramatically in a way that would allow those things to trigger the prepayment.
How high is high on the yield on these things?
Well, during the crisis, we were getting 16-18% coupons. They're now in the kind of 11-13% zone.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. And an overnight treasury, not overnight, but let's say the 10-year is probably, I'm not in front of my screen, but let's say it's about 190, 195 right now on the 10-year. And so if you can get 5 to 7 times the risk-free rate of return in arguably, you know, reasonably well risk-adjusted strategies, this is the sort of stuff that we put capital into. So you know, I tell clients that at the end of the day, we have to deal with the world the way it is, not the way we want it to be, not the way we think it should be, and certainly not the way it ought to be. And so the way the world is right now is we have a very aggressive easing by the Federal Reserve. We have a Congress that's unfortunately dysfunctional. They can't figure out a way to do what Ben Bernanke referred to as the grand bargain, where we get some kind of fiscal compromise and we put the country on a better economic footing as it relates to the projection of government spending. And so because of all this uncertainty, we're staying more in the fixed income side, less on the equity side.
So is there an ETF on these high-yield mortgage-type securities, or is this more of a niche manager play?
Yeah, I would say this is more of a niche manager play. I certainly wouldn't want to recommend an ETF because a lot of the things that we do are fairly sophisticated, where we're getting long these things and getting short U.S. Treasuries to hedge out the interest rate risk. And so I wouldn't recommend an ETF for this sort of stuff.
Yeah, you know, this is a problem I have. You know, I'm the mad hedge fund trader, but in reality, 95% of the strategies that hedge funds are using these days can't be executed by individuals. You have to have a global 24-hour desk. You have to have a 100-man research team. You have to have relationships with prime brokers and so on. So the only way to get at these is through a niche manager, and your job is to find these good managers.
Well, and so one of the things that's and to your point, which I obviously agree with everything you just said, to your point, one of the things that Skybridge has tried to do is try to make the hedge fund community accessible, at least to the mass affluent. And that's why, you know, it's a high minimum, $50,000, but it's a low minimum as it relates to what you typically see in the hedge fund space, where there could be $10, $15 million minimums on some of these top-performing hedge fund managers. So we're trying to create an access point for people. We'll do all of the qualitative and quantitative due diligence and research. We'll do all the risk management. We'll tactically asset allocate and shift into different sectors depending on what's going on in the macro environment. We're giving people the opportunity with their $50,000 to get exposure to people that years ago they would have needed $15 million, and that would have gone into just one fund, as opposed to this diversified 28-fund mix, if you will.
Another big question of the day is gold toast.
Yeah, you know, I'm the worst person on the planet to ask about gold, because I guess I'll give you my opinion, and then I'll probably tell your listeners do exactly the opposite of what I'm about to say, because I've always gotten gold wrong. It's an asset class that I don't fully understand, but I've been consistently negative on gold. And there was a four-year period of time where I got that obviously completely wrong, as it went from 1,000 to 1,700. It's now at like 1,338 or something like that. But here's what I would say to your listeners. If you took all of the farmland in the United States, and you took 10 times the farmland, and you took 10 Exxon Mobils, our largest energy company, that combination is probably equal to all of the value of all the gold that's ever been mined in the world. Okay, and so you'd have to ask yourself, would you like 10 Exxon Mobils and 10 times the American farmland, the heartland of America, or some gigantic cube of gold?
Yeah, that's the Buffett argument against gold.
Yeah, exactly. I referenced Mr. Buffett's argument all day, because I do think that investors are better suited in cash flow generative, yield generating strategies, or, you know, as Buffett would describe, retained earning strategies, or where you're gonna be able to buy back stock, increase dividends. This is the sort of stuff, the quote unquote toll roads that Buffett refers to, I'd rather own than these kind of hard to understand asset classes. Now, there will always be a spot for gold. That's the way our civilizations work for 5,000 years. But I just tell people, have less of it as opposed to more of it.
Another area that's really gotten beaten up is emerging markets. Have you got any interest at these levels? These things are way down from their peaks.
Yeah, we do have a small exposure in the emerging market space. That's going to be principally for us in Asia. And that would be Southeast Asia, sort of like the Singapore, Malaysia, Indonesia, that area of the world, less so in China proper. Here's what I would say. There is a ton of opportunity in American-based companies with American financial accounting standards with the American legal system attached to these companies. And I would certainly, dollar for dollar, would probably steer more capital in that direction than into the emerging markets. But in the emerging markets, you'll get more volatility. You'll probably be taking on a higher measurement of risk, if you will. And with that risk, there'll probably be more reward. But I would probably have smaller allocations in those areas than, say, U.S.-based equity.
What about the Japanese yen? It's already had a huge plunge, the Japanese ETF, the YCS, nearly double now in 7 months. Have we got more to run there, or are we peaking out for the time being?
Well, no, I actually believe that there's more to run there. I think that one of the things I would tell your listeners is we're in a totally different world post 2008 economic crisis, where governments are now participating in markets. If you and I were, again, having this call in the mid-1990s, it would have been unheard of for the Federal Reserve to have a $3, $4 trillion balance sheet. They would raise rates to slow down the economy, lower rates to help the economy expand, and once in a while they'd intervene in currency markets to create what was called purchasing power parity among the nations. Okay, you fast forward 15 years, and now we are in a central banking environment where the central bankers have some hedge fund responsibilities. They are macro trading the world, and all of them are doing everything they can to push their currencies lower. So we're having this race to the bottom in the global currency markets, and people are doing this, frankly, because they want to monetize their debt. In Japan's case, they have a very high debt-to-GDP ratio. It's something over 200% now. It's probably 210%. The prime minister there is working with the central bank to see if they can reverse the 25-year cycle of deflation that they've had. And so I think there's going to be more to go in terms of the depression of the Japanese yen. I think there's going to be more to go in terms of the upside move to the Japanese stock market. We certainly have investments there.
Which leads to the next question, the Japanese stock market. It's the world's best performing major market this year. Has that got more to run? Are we looking at 20,000 in the Nikkei?
You know, sir, these things will always go in a jagged line. I don't see anything moving in a 45-degree angle or any perfect slope. But I do think the macro environment is such that that market will be higher a year from now than it is today. How much higher is impossible for me to predict, but I do think there's a lot of room there because of what's going on in the government and the pressure that the government is putting on the Japanese yen. This will have a big effect on their exports. This will have a big effect on asset prices in Japan, the same way the Federal Reserve has had an effect on our asset prices here. For your listeners, I think it's the key phrase, interest rates are the physical gravity of financial assets. So the lower they are, the higher the likelihood is that financial assets are going to levitate in those environments. And so in the case of Japan, I think that the monetary policy is going to levitate those assets. And so this is a macroeconomic factor that you have to play. I can't say it with certainty. Anybody that says it with certainty, run from them. These are all probability-based decisions. But I think the odds are in our favor that the Japanese stock market is going to be a lot higher next year than it is this year.
Well, Anthony, this has been great. You've given the listeners some great insights here. Let's do this again.
I hope so, sir. Thank you so much for having me on the show. John, I hope you'll invite me back. And I'm very thrilled that you were able to attend our conference. And I hope you'll come to either the one in Singapore or the one in Las Vegas next year.
Thank you for joining me today. I also want to invite you to my summer strategy luncheon series, which will kick off with my luncheon in New York on July 2nd. The food at these things is great, the conversation is better, and everyone learns a lot about the financial markets, especially where to put their money at these events. The other dates this summer will be London, July 8th, Amsterdam, July 12th, Berlin, Germany, July 16th, Frankfurt, Germany, July 19th, Portofino, Italy,
on July 25th and High in the Alps in Zermatt, Switzerland on August 9th. You can buy tickets for the luncheons at my website at www.madhedgefundtrader.com. Just go to the home page, click on Strategy Luncheons, and scroll down to the specific luncheon you want to buy. That is going to wrap it up for today. This is John Thomas, the Mad Hedge Fund Trader, signing off. Good luck and good trading.